This interview was recorded November 6th.
This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. I'm Lou Gum. Thanks for joining us on this Friday. My guest today is Diana Gomez. She's the director of Yuma County Public Health Service District, and we're just going to jump right into it and talk a little bit about COVID-19 in our community. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
It's really nice that you're our first in-studio guest in quite some time, and I think it says something that you're the Yuma County Health Director, so it's nice to have you in studio.
Thank you.
So let's get a current state of nature. What are the numbers in Yuma County now? We had 118 cases yesterday. Before we talk about any sort of uptick or anything, let's just get a sense of where we are right now.
So we've seen the numbers increase here in Yuma County as well as in the rest of the state. And we anticipated that we would start to see an increase as we opened up businesses, as we went back to school, as we started hitting the fall months. But just because we anticipated doesn't mean it's time to let our guard down. It's more important now than ever to follow those precautions.
What is the positivity rate now? That's one of the numbers I started watching after our last conversation, actually our last two conversations back, in terms of how the community is faring. I've never seen it go below 14%. Am I right about that?
So that's the average positivity rate, and that's the trend from the very beginning to now that you see on the forward-facing dashboard. If you want to look at the ADHS dashboard, you can track it also by week, and you can see positivity rates specific per week. And let me just give you some numbers so you can see how the trend has gone up. When you look at October 4th, we were at 9% positivity for that week. Then October 11th, we went up to 9%. October 18th, we were at 12%. And this last week of October 25th that we recorded, we're up to 17%. Yeah. That gives you a clear picture of where we are week by week. Positivity is an indicator of the overall prevalence of community spread.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about the importance of that number in terms of measuring what's happening in the community.
So at early on in the pandemic, we were having an issue with getting results turned around quickly. That's been resolved with most places reporting back 24 hours to 48 hours. We also now have the advantage of rapid tests, which is another tool in the toolkit. So you can now, if you track it by week positivity, you can now see an accurate snapshot of where we are in the community. And that's important. That's important as we expand the capacity in businesses, as we look at whether we're doing hybrid or virtual models in our school. It gives us a tool to plan for, you know, moving forward, which is what we want to do. But we also want to do it cautiously and in a safe manner. So keeping track of those numbers lets us know if we need to scale back some things and enhance mitigation processes.
A switch from 9% to 17% or 10 to 17, that's pretty dramatic.
It is significant. And again, that's why it's concerning. It's also important for people to remember we all have COVID fatigue. Yeah. We've been dealing with this for so long that when we start seeing those numbers go down, we start getting comfortable. We start relaxing our approach to a lot of things. And so then you start seeing the numbers go up again. And it's just, this has been a long process. And so we just have to be consistent. And I know it's frustrating and it's exhausting, but that's what we need to do to get through this as a community.
There is fatigue because the numbers feel like they mean less and less over time to the community. They just are another thing that maybe we've thrown into a newscast or that they expect at the top of a TV news show. Does that concern you?
It concerns me, and I think it's important to take into account that all these numbers are part of an equation, and you have to take them all into consideration. One of the things that we track as well, we track positivity, so that's important. We track the number of COVID-like illness as well and hospitalizations, and those are numbers because, as you know, as most people have learned through this pandemic, the majority of people develop mild to moderate symptoms. Some people are symptomatic, and then there's people that require that medical care. So seeing an increase in hospitalizations is indicative of the fact that there's greater community spread. And so that's why those mitigations, you have to look at everything when you make your decision. And looking at the numbers, there's always a story behind the numbers. So it's important that people visit those sites, get the information behind those numbers to get a clearer picture.
I think something really important you said, too, is that there's a story behind that number.
Right. And it's important, I think, it's important to look at the educational piece of it. And so when we report those numbers, it's not to be alarmist. It's not to, you know, come out and because I know it's frustrating. And so it's to make sure that that education piece is there so that you as an individual can go and look at the entire picture. Because sometimes looking at just one metric isn't enough.
Well, and when I say story behind that number, there's also a person behind that number.
And that's correct. And we look at that and we want to reduce those levels of infections. You see our number of deaths in our county. Those are, you know, they impact us as personally, as a community. And so we try to do our very best to make sure we keep those numbers down, because as it has been from the very beginning, these mitigation strategies are to protect the most vulnerable residents in our community.
Let's talk a little bit about deaths. Those are one of the things that people sort of say, well, numbers are up, but deaths are down. They definitely aren't tracking the way they were early in the pandemic along with cases. But your take on deaths, is that a sign of improved treatment that we're seeing fewer deaths with the number of cases that we're seeing?
So first, our sincerest condolences to everybody that's lost a loved one during this pandemic. And you've seen, to answer your question, we have seen a decrease in deaths. And this was a novel virus. We were learning, and we continue to learn more about it every day. And we've had more experience, so the treatment protocol, the mitigation strategies continue to evolve. So somebody who got treatment in the beginning, you know, had the benefit of what we knew then. Somebody who experiences symptoms now and requires treatment has the benefit of everything we've learned to this point. And that's going to continue to happen. And eventually we'll have a vaccine. And as we learn and we continue to get better, we'll develop better strategies to treat people that develop symptoms.
You mentioned hospitalizations. Has that something that stayed fairly consistent throughout the virus? Are they up or down?
So our hospitalization numbers have gone up in the last week if you're looking at the data. And again, that's concerning, because we want to make sure we don't overwhelm the hospital system. We have mechanisms in place to make sure that there is not a surge, but surge capacity is definitely front and center. You know, sometimes it's not, early in the pandemic, we were considering alternative care sites, but for us, it's not an issue of space. It's an issue of staffing. You can have we've gotten more ventilators, we've gotten more, we have antivirals, we have better treatments, but you also need staff that's going to be able to provide that treatment. And that's why monitoring those numbers is important, so that we can give the hospital, the clinical partners in our community, the ability to treat people that need that treatment in an efficient manner.
And I ask about consistency. So if you get an uptick in cases, are you able to extrapolate based on a consistent statistic how many of those people might need hospitalization, 10%, 5%? Do you know that?
So we look at the data and we see that if you have underlying medical conditions or comorbidities, the risk that you might develop serious complications is higher. So when we look at those positivity rates, a lot of that information you don't know until you do the contact tracing piece. So it's kind of a moving, you know, metric. And so that's why we tell people, especially if you're in that vulnerable population, to make sure you take those precautions. And again, the rest of us that wear, for example, our mask or practice those practices are to protect that very population.
And as you say, there's a story behind that number, right? Before we came in, you mentioned something, and I didn't plan to ask you about this as well. Do you have a sense of how, before we get into vaccinations and flu season, do you have a sense of how flu is tracking along with COVID? Is it too early in the season to know?
So right now, we haven't seen, flu season typically starts around September. We haven't seen any confirmed cases yet. And we're hopeful that some of these mitigation practices that we're practicing for COVID will also help alleviate some of those, the burden that normally would be caused by influenza. So it's another reminder that in absence of a COVID vaccine, we do have a flu vaccine. So please go out and get your flu shot.
Yeah, let's stick with the flu for a second, because you'd mentioned that you've been running through the vaccine here in Yuma County. So people are heeding the message to get the flu vaccine.
Yes, and people have been very responsive. We've distributed a lot of doses of vaccine. People have been very proactive about getting vaccinated. We've been, along with our community partners throughout Yuma County, you know, you have pharmacies, you have your private physicians, you have your clinics. Everybody's been having vaccination clinics. We, the health department, will have walk-in vaccination clinics. Actually, we have one today from 8:30 till 11:30 at the health department. We will have another one next Friday, the 13th, and another one the following Friday, November 20th, again, from 8:30 to 11:30.
Who should get the vaccine for flu? Everyone?
So we want everybody, say for anyone over 6 months of age. We particularly want, we want school children that are getting back to school. We want all vulnerable populations. But it's a good idea for everyone to get a flu shot.
And that's a vaccine that changes every year. They sort of are always adapting it.
Correct.
When do you know if it's effective?
So when we start seeing the numbers, you make an estimate, you try to see what virus is circulating in the community, and you formulate that vaccine, up to a year before. So we won't know until we actually start tracking those cases. But it is possible to get influenza, flu, and also get COVID. So we just want to avoid that scenario.
Yeah, I know that this is not a typical year, but in a typical year, how does the flu impact our county?
So again, when you see the increase in flu cases, it impacts our healthcare system. More importantly, our clinical partners. So you start seeing a stress on the hospital system where they have to go to surge capacity. You have to get more staff. You have to get more beds. You start seeing people missing work. Same thing for school. So again, it's one of those things where now we have two viruses circulating in our community. So we want to do the best we can to make sure we mitigate and reduce that risk.
Do we have a sense of how rough it would be to have the flu and COVID at the same time?
It would be difficult. It would put an extra stressor. We have a mechanism in place that was set up by the Arizona Department of Health Services called a surge line that allows for the transfer of patients from one healthcare system to another so that one particular entity is not overwhelmed. In Arizona, that is being piloted for flu patients as well.
That's the transferring patients.
Correct.
To where there's bed space, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah, that started 6-7 months
ago.
Yeah,
that started back in March, and it's in place. It was originally just for COVID patients, but it's been expanded as a pilot project to include influenza and flu.
We always assume that in the winter that our hospitals' burdens are going to rise because we have such a large winter population. Have we seen that yet? What are you seeing in terms of the availability of healthcare based on that winter population?
So right now, again, that the visitors or the travel
is
restricted.
Yeah.
So we're still waiting to see what that
will
play out.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Diana Gomez, director of the Yuma County Public Health Service District, and we'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit more about contact tracing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Arizona Edition. I'm Lou Gum. My guest today is Diana Gomez. She's the director of the Yuma County Public Health Service District. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about contact tracing. Explain again how contact tracing works, and I guess I'm wondering, too, does everyone who tests positive in Yuma County hear from Yuma County and a contact tracer?
So contact tracing is a way in which once you've been notified of your positive result, we go back and follow up with you. We try to determine some details that will help us determine how the virus is spreading, particularly if it's where you contracted potentially the virus, and it gives us insight as to what we need to do from a public health perspective. So when you go and get tested, depending on the testing mechanism that was used, whether you went to a clinic or one of our big events, it is reported to a state lab. We will get the results, but more than likely, your primary point of contact, your first indication will be by the person that tested you, whether it was the facility or the lab. Then public health will follow up with you. So we will follow up with you to make sure that you're aware of the mitigation, whether you need to isolate or the precautions that you need to take. We'll get more information, and then we'll follow up with some of the contacts, particularly if it's a high-risk setting, if it's a work site or one of those things where we need to expand our mitigation efforts. So it's important that if you do get the call from a public health official, that you please answer and that you please work with us, because you're part of an essential piece to help us mitigate another outbreak or help slow down the spread of the disease.
What do you learn from that information? So I'm assuming then you could look back over the last 6 months at certain events and know that was maybe a spread event.
So early in the pandemic, you're right, you go back retrospectively and you examine that data, and you see early on in the pandemic, a lot of it was from large gatherings. This was before we had our mask mandate in place. This was prior to that. And so you see a lot of that was happening then. Now, when you look at it, you see that it's happening in smaller gatherings. We're just tired of some of these
casual
mitigation processes. Yeah, it's fatigue. And so you're seeing a lot of more of these increases resulting from, you know, holiday get-togethers or just regular get-togethers or instances where they were just large events where, you know, the mitigation practices weren't followed.
Well, I'm going to take you down a road you don't want to go. A recent study from Stanford said that political campaign events contributed to the spread of COVID-19. It was a Stanford study that said they studied counties where events had taken place versus counties where they didn't. Yuma was one of those counties. They said 250 cases per 100,000 residents in counties that hosted rallies versus communities that didn't. What can you tell us about how the campaign season might have affected things in Yuma County?
So I'll tell you that the guidance has been the very same from the very beginning. You know, we tell people that social distancing, that wearing the mask is important, which is the message that we continue to tell people today. Everything, every decision you make is about your threat level, you know, what you're comfortable with, right? So if you're comfortable attending an event, we've told people from the very beginning, regardless of what activity you engage in, if there's going to be more than 10 people, if there's going to be a large gathering, if you're going to be with people that are not within your household contacts, your immediate household contacts, it's important to take that precaution. And that was the message back then. That's the message moving forward. And as we continue to move on through the different activities that are going to be occurring in our community, we hope people adhere to that message and take those precautions.
Well, perhaps one of the byproducts of the campaign season was a message that COVID-19 is not that serious. Deaths are down. Don't worry about it. That must have been concerning for your department.
So from a public health perspective, we tell people that it's important that, you know, you look, we don't want to create panic. We want to disperse information. We want you to have access to that data, to those metrics, so that you yourself can make those decisions and be informed. The CDC has been consistent with the guidance. From a public health perspective, we, with our state partners, have issued the same messaging. And so, again, it's one of those things where consistent messaging is important, and it's important for people to get the facts. Again, we don't want to be alarmist. We just want you to have the information. We want you to have the facts. And again, visit those sites that are vetted, like the CDC, the state health department, your local health department, so that you can get information that is accurate and confirmed.
And last question on this subject, but did you hear from any of the campaigns or any state officials about these rallies? And did they ask for advice? No.
The guidance. We set out the guidance, and again, you know, we provided those guidance and recommendations.
I think what's concerning too about the idea that deaths are down, I get stuck in this in my head. I don't know if you do, but I imagine if some other event had killed 360 people in our community over the last 6 or 7 months, we would have a pretty strong response, whether that was auto accidents or poisonings or dog bites, whatever that would be. And as you say, there's sort of a fatigue.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to acknowledge that that's where we're at. Yeah. But I think it's also important, you know, we're meant to, we normally deal with a crisis or a trauma, and then we assess the situation and then we move on. It's been very difficult the last couple of months because we don't have the ability to move on because it's a virus that continues to circulate. So as we're trying to move towards the recovery phase, we're still dealing with an ongoing pandemic, which complicates things. So again, that touches on the behavioral health aspect of this. And I think we're telling people to socially distance. That doesn't mean to socially disconnect. And I think it's important for listeners to know that there's resources, and it's important, just like we're telling you to take care of your health and to follow the mitigation guidelines, it's important to take care of your behavioral health. And that's something that we don't talk a lot about. So Arizona has a free service called Resilient Arizona. You can access it. It's 211, and it's available. It's free, 100% free and confidential. And it's available to anybody that, you know, just wants to talk about the crisis. And again, we've lost so many people to this virus, and it's important that we acknowledge that and we acknowledge the loss and the trauma that comes with that.
Just a couple minutes left, so I want to get two questions in. First, I want to ask about the cost of COVID-19. Does the county have any sense of the monetary cost of the last 7-8 months of responding to this?
So again, I can't give you an exact figure right now. I wasn't prepared for that.
There's
those tangible costs which you can see, like the expenses of PPE and staffing, and then there's those non-tangible costs, again, like we talked about, for behavioral health. So taken into that equation, you know, we saw from our perspective, we've been very fortunate to have received a lot of assistance from our state partners, the state health department, in the provision of PPE and the provision of test kits, and which we have distributed then to our community partners, which has been helpful. And then again, that initial investment. And then there's that cost that comes associated from business closures or loss of productivity when places were closed or kids right. couldn't go to school and their parents couldn't go to work. So I think as we move further along and we do a retrospective, you'll have a better.
And finally, we've got a little over a minute left, so I think it's worth, based on what we've been talking about, reiterating what the guidelines and recommendations
Correct.
Are for how to deal with COVID in our community. We've only briefly mentioned masking up and things
yes,
like that.
Yes, please yeah. continue to wear your mask. It's a way to keep you and somebody else safe. Please wash your hands. Please stay home when you're sick. That's very important. Please continue. If you're going to be in a large gathering, please observe social distancing. Please limit your contact with people outside your immediate family. And if you are going to engage in activities of that nature, please be careful.
And just about a minute left. Any hard lessons that come up for you for the county? Were you able to identify some strengths and weaknesses of your county response?
So again, consistent messaging
yeah.
is important. Being able to have a unified voice, and that's I think where you know platforms such as your radio show and our, a lot of the other communication partners are important. Because being able, as I mentioned before, it's a novel virus, and so when we need to share information, we need to do it quickly and we need to do it efficiently. So again, continuing to shore up our communication responses, and again. We had stockpiled supplies, but I don't think we were prepared for the length of this pandemic. So again, it's always a continuing process of continuing to plan for the next one.
Diana Gomez, Director of Yuma County Public Health District. It always goes so fast. I have so many more questions, but we'll have you back. Thank you so much for your
Thank
time.
Thank you.
That's Arizona Edition for this week. Join us next week. We'll see if we can maybe get another live guest in the studio. Thanks, Diana.